Good morning. How y'all are? They say in South Louisiana. I want you to remember that song you just got through singing because we're going to talk about a very powerful verse that was in that particular song. One of the mantras of our church is what you see up here on the screen, to follow Jesus with undaunted courage. Courage is kind of an interesting thing. I was heard a story recently about people that run an Alaskan cruise, big old ship full of people. And one of the things you do on an Alaskan cruise is you come up kind of close to where a glacier is, and the glacier involves in calving. It breaks off big old pieces, makes a tremendous noise. It's really kind of fun to watch. All the people were standing on the edge of the ship watching this when they heard something you do not want to hear if you're on a cruise. They heard a splash, and everybody looked down, and there was a little four-year-old kid that had fallen in the water. And the next thing they heard was another splash, and they looked down, and there was this 84-year-old man paddling his way over to this little kid, holding his head above water until they threw in the life preservers and saved him, took him into the infirmary, helped him get past any kind of hypothermia they may have experienced. And then that night they had this big banquet for this guy. And they were praising him, everybody's gonna praise him, and finally he gets to come up to the microphone. And the first thing he says when he gets to the microphone is, "Who pushed me?" Okay. Now some people have to be heroic because they were pushed, but other times that's not the case. One of the heroes of my youth was a guy by the name of Audie Murphy. Audie Murphy left a dirt poor ranch when he was 16 years old, lied about his age, and enrolled in the Army to go fight in World War II, and became the most decorated soldier in our country's history. He was awarded 33 medals. One of them was the Medal of Honor from our country, but he got medals from all over the world, as it turns out. He wrote an autobiography called To Hell and Back. This book was made into a movie by Universal Studios, and it became the highest grossing movie they had ever produced until 20 years later when Jaws came out. I have had the opportunity to go to Arlington Cemetery a number of times, and when I go to Arlington Cemetery, I always try to find Audie Murphy's grave. It is the second most visited grave in the Arlington Cemetery, second only to JFK. And interestingly enough, you would think there's going to be this big old monument to this guy that got the most decorated soldier ever. But one of the things that Audie Murphy said was, "I don't want anything more than a stone, just like my other brothers have. So it's just a plain everyday stone. All the grass around it's kind of worn out because the people come there to see his place." A few years ago, I was working on a consulting job, and I got to be in an airplane with a Marine from New Orleans who had won the Medal of Honor. And there's just something about being in the company of courage that's really, really inspiring. And so one of the things we're going to do today is we're going to talk about courage, and hopefully this is going to work. And one of the things we're going to learn from the scriptures is that courageous people are courageous because of what they know. And where we're going to start here, we're going to start in the Old Testament, and we're going to start with Joshua 1. Now, what is happening in Joshua 1 is all the Israelites are on the eastern side of the Jordan River. They're getting ready to cross the Jordan River and to attack a city known as Jericho. And one of the things that happens in chapter 1 is God has a conversation with Joshua. And then Joshua turns around and has a conversation with the Israelite people before they go on this warpath. And here's what God said to Joshua: Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be terrified. Do not be discouraged. For the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. This was not the first time that the Israelites had appeared before the land of Canaan. The first time They had appeared way south of here at a place called Kadesh Barnea. And Moses had brought the people up there and said, there's a land of Canaan. We're going to go in and take that land. God's going to give that land to us. But the Israelite people said, no, no, no. We're going to send in some spies, one spy from each one of the tribes. We're going to send 12 spies in. And let's see what they say first. Two of the spies come back, and we all know their names. Their names were Joshua and Caleb, right? They come back and say, hey, man, God's given us this land. It's a great land. But the other 10 spies who came back, and you remember their names? No, you don't remember their names. They came back and said, no, 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 no. These people are giants. Their cities are fortified. They're not just fortified. They're fortified up to heaven. There's no way that we can take these people. And so what happened as a result of their fear, for the next 38 years, they went back out into the wilderness. And for 38 years, Caleb and Joshua attended funerals until all the people of adult age who made that decision died off. And now there's about 2 million of them left over here. They're on the other side of the Jordan River at a place called Chittim, and they're getting ready to go in and take this land. Now, before they do that, Joshua wants to do a little military reconnaissance. So he's going to choose 2 spies. He says, then Joshua, the son of Nun, secretly sent 2 spies from Chittim. He said, go look over the land, he said, especially Jericho. So they went and entered the house of a prostitute by the name of Rahab. Now, Rahab is going to be central to our story today because we're looking for courage and we're looking for the source of godly courage. And we're going to find it in this woman by the name of Rahab. Now, what Joshua is doing here is he's not sending spies in to do what the first group did. He's not sending spies in to find out if we can take this land. Joshua says, we're going to take this land, but I do want to get some military insight and something to be helpful for entering this land, because here's what he knew. He knew the more knowledge that his army had, the more courageous that army would be. So there is this connection between knowing and courage that we're going to emphasize a lot today. Now, one of the things it was very helpful for them to learn as a result of this little military reconnaissance was that their enemies did not have courage. They were losing courage, as it turns out. They come back, and here's what they tell Joshua. The Lord has surely given the whole land into our hands. All the people are melting in fear because of us. Now, why were they melting in fear? And the reason they were melting in fear is they knew that their gods were failing against the gods of the Israelites. And what happens is you're going to lose courage if your God is losing. And so the spies not only went over there to get military intelligence, but they also went over there to bring salvation to somebody. And that somebody is Rahab. So they went and entered the house of a prostitute named Rahab and stayed there. Now, if you are a spy and you're going into a city like Jericho, you don't want people, you're a spy, you don't want people to know you're there. And so where is the best place where a traveler could blend in? Well, the best place that a traveler could blend in is in an inn where all travelers go. Now, in those days, an inn was a brothel and a brothel was an inn. And so they end up at this place that is run by Rahab. Now, Rahab, it's not a coincidence that they ended up in this place. It is providence that ended up in this place. Because what God is going to do is he's going to show that courage can actually save somebody too, and maybe a lot of somebodies. And one of the things that God is looking for is he's looking for courage and boldness like Rahab had. And one of the strongest evidences of our faith is a refusal to be intimidated. You know, one of the things God wants us to do is to be better people. I'm going to show you an example of somebody who wanted to be a better person in just a minute. Okay? He wants us to be better people. He wants this church to be a better church. And the problem is that there's somebody out there trying to stunt our growth. He's trying to stunt your growth. He's trying to stunt the growth of this church. And his name is Satan. And one of Satan's greatest tools to use against us to keep us from growing the way we should is fear. Satan wants to scare the heaven out of us. Okay? He does not want us to grow. And he's going to use fear to keep that from happening. Now, boldness is the surest indicator of how much you really believe what you say that you believe. Now, a classic case of this is what we see in Acts 5. In Acts 5, Peter and the other apostles are out talking about this guy, Jesus Christ, and everything, you know, he is the new Messiah. And this group of Jews called the Sanhedrin did not like this. They were very jealous about all the people that were gathering around these guys listening to them. So they arrest them and put them in jail. Well, of course, during the night, an angel opens up the jail, and there they are, back out preaching and teaching about Jesus Christ. And so the Sanhedrin sends guys to bring them back to the Sanhedrin, and they say to them, you are going to stop doing this. As a matter of fact, they were discussing among themselves the possibility of killing Peter and the apostles, when some dude by the name of Gamaliel stands up and says, wait, you don't want to do that. Because if you do that, that's just going to put a spark under this movement, and it's going to be even worse what we're dealing with right now. And so what they do, instead, they let them go, but they don't let them go until they flog them really, really good. And you would think, well, they flogged them really, really good, they'll quit this stuff. But no, what we find in Acts 5:42, day after day in the temple courts and from house to house, they never stopped teaching and proclaiming the good news that Jesus is the Christ. Somehow or another, they were courageous, even though they were beaten and beaten hard and threatened. Now, the greatest James Bond person ever was Sean Connery. Now, some of you may disagree, and we live in a free country, and so you are free to be absolutely wrong about this. But Sean Connery, and I noticed when I put this picture up, a lot of the women went, oh, yeah, I know how you are. But it's kind of interesting, when he was first approached back in the 60s about taking on the James Bond role, I love what he said. He says, I'm going to take this role because it will give me the opportunity to be someone better than I am. And essentially, that's what we are being called to. We are being called to be somebody better than we are right now. And again, there's somebody out there that's trying to stunt that, and that person is going to use fear to do that. And so what we need is we need to be people that have courage. And so let's talk about, right, here's a classic case for us. Here's a classic example of it for us, of boldness and courage, and that is in Rahab. That's kind of interesting to me that I've never met another woman named Rahab. I've never looked into a little bassinet and said, oh, little Rahab's got the curliest hair. You never do that. Isn't that weird? And the reason it's weird is because there are only two women in the Bible that are mentioned more often than Rahab. And that is Sarah, the mother of the wife of Abraham, and Mary, the mother of Jesus. I want to suggest to you one of the most heroic persons in the Bible is Rahab. And part of the reason we don't name our kids after Rahab is because we remember what Rahab was, not what Rahab did. And let me tell you, she did some stuff. In Joshua 2, verses 9 and 10, what has happened is that Rahab, these spies are there, right? And Jericho was in high alert. They can look and they can see across the river. They can see about 2 million people over there, and they know what they're about to do. They're about to come across this river and attack them. And they suspect that there's some spies around. They hear that there's some spies around, and guess where they think the spies are? They think they're at Rahab's place. So they go over to Rahab's place, and they say, you got the spies in there, bring them out. And Rahab basically lies to them. Rahab says, they are not here, They already left. They're heading back across the river. If you hurry, you might be able to catch them. In reality, what she had done is she had taken them up on the top, on the roof of her house, and covered them with some thatch, some limbs and stuff. After she sends these guys away, she goes up there and she has this conversation with the spies. And here's what she says. I know. That verb right there is the most powerful verb in this chapter. That verb is the key that made her do amazing things. Rahab is going to do amazing things. She's going to do risky things. She's going to be bold things. And the primary reason she's going to do this is because of what she knows. And she knows, if you think about this for a minute, some outrageous stuff. Look what she says. I know that the Lord has given this land to you and that a great fear of you has fallen upon us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. We have heard how the, look what she heard. We have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt. And what you did to Sihon and Og, the two kings of the Amorites east of the Jordan, whom you completely destroyed. She says, here's what I know. Your king, the king of the Israelites, the Lord of the Israelites, the God of the Israelites, opened up the Red Sea and your people walked across it on dry land. Your king caused the Nile to turn into blood. Your king killed the firstborn of all the Egyptians, but none of your people. Your king came to the Amorites, to Og and Shihon, what is it? Og and Shihon, and destroyed them. Now, the reason this is so amazing to her is because in those days, let me back up, in their culture, every god had its own domain. I mean, if I send my God over to your area of the world, your country, and it gets defeated, that's because your God is strong, has domain in your country. But if you come over here to my country where my God has domain, then my God's going to win over your God because he has domain here. But Rahab is looking at this picture here. She's seeing something outrageous. Your God had domain over the Egyptians in Egypt. Your God had domain over the Amorites in the Amorite country. Your God doesn't have domain. Your God has dominion. Your God is the king of all of the earth. And this was something outrageous for her to believe. She looked at actual historical events in history, and that gave her a very strong faith and very strong courage. Strong faith and strong courage is a belief in some really outrageous things. Her boldness was grounded in the track record of a God who intervened in real history to save his people, and he never failed. She looked at this God doing things that actually people knew about, and she said, holy cow, okay, I'm going to do some stuff that's risky, I'm going to do some stuff that's bold, and I'm going to do some stuff that's tough. And if you think about it, our courage, our boldness, should be based on some unbelievably outrageous things that we believe. Just like Rahab believed that that sea was parted and people walked across on dry land, you and I believe in some things that are just outrageous. We believe that our Savior was born a virgin. Think about that for just a minute. We believe that he lived a completely sinless life. Really think about that for just a minute. Somebody actually lived on this earth and never did anything wrong? Come on. We believe that he went to the cross not because he had to, because he wanted to. He actually went to the cross for a group of people like you and me, pathetic, ridiculous people, okay, who did not deserve to have that done for him. We actually believe that that he was put in a tomb, and 3 days later he broke out. Listen, everybody in history believed that when somebody's dead, they are dead. You just sang, we believe because he's alive and he's risen. The resurrection was an amazing thing for us to believe. It's an outrageous thing. We actually believe he's ascended to heaven where he reigns as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. We actually believe that he's coming back. Think about this list of stuff that we believe. It is outrageous stuff. And if we know this, we can't live like cowards. If we really know this, we can't help but be courageous and to be bold. We cannot live like it's BC. We can't live like it's before Christ. Christ has come. All these things have happened. And if all these things can happen, then we can be bold. God has a winning record. He has done amazing things. And that should conquer any fears that we have about wearing his jersey. Because one of the things we have to do, we have to declare who we're for out there in our culture. And that ain't always easy, doing that out there in our culture. I mean, look what Rahab said. Now then, please swear to me by the Lord that you will show kindness to my family because I have shown kindness to you. Give me a sure sign that you will spare the lives of my father, my mother, my brothers, my sisters, and all who belong to them, that you may save us from death. You think about what she's just done when she did that. She has declared that she's chosen the side of the Israelites against her culture. Now, the reason that's so courageous and so bold is because she doesn't just get to leave with the spies right then. She's got to stay in Jericho. She's got to stay in that culture until the Israelites come over and rescue her. She's got to be strong, she's got to be bold, and she's got to be courageous. She's got to make great decisions, strong decisions, while she's still in that culture. You and I are like we're living in Jericho. We are in this culture for right now. And you and I have to make a decision about whose side we're going to be on. We have to make that decision, but decide whose jersey we're going to wear. Because we're not on the other side of the river yet. We're going to be, but we're not on the other side of that river yet. And so Rahab understood that she could not be neutral, that God has plans, and you have to choose what side you're going to be on. And that takes a lot of courage. It was a treason against her culture to choose God, but it was more risky than not doing it, because she could see what was coming. And you and I can see what is coming if we believe all these things that are just outrageous, that is the basis of our faith. In our culture today, our faith is supposed to be private. It's supposed to be something you don't talk about. You don't talk about it at your work. You don't wear it on your sleeve at work. In politics, we don't put it in politics. This is all ridiculous. This is just ridiculous. You should read N.T. Wright's book on the surprise of scriptures, where he deals with this whole issue. It's ridiculous for us to leave our faith out of politics. It's ridiculous for us to do that, okay? We live in this culture, and we have to take a side. And sometimes that's going to cause problems for us. It's risky sometimes, and we need courage sometimes. And the thing that will give us courage is to remember what we know. Incredible things that our God has done. That's what gives us courage. The other thing that courage does is that courage helps us know that other people need to know the score. Some of you may know about this young man who was a mentally disabled young guy. About, I think it was last July in Florida, he drowned in a retention pond. Now, what was really tragic about this event is that there were 5 teenage boys that watched this happen and cheered him on as he drowned. Now, the community thought, you need to prosecute those kids and throw them in jail. But you know what the prosecutor had to tell the community? There is no crime against not saving somebody. It's no crime not to save somebody. As a matter of fact, there was this interesting case in the Supreme Court in 2012 where this very thing came up. Matter of fact, I suspect, you know this deputy in Florida that didn't go in when the shooter was in there shooting kids in that school, and they're just destroying this guy, but they're also arrested him. I don't think he's gonna end up losing this case, because Supreme Court Justice Kennedy wrote his opinion on this, and he said, look, we may have a moral problem with it, but there is no legal duty for you to try to save somebody in danger. But we are Christians, and Christians know that you either have to be calloused or you have to be cowardly to see somebody we know needs to be saved. We don't do anything. We're like those five kids watching somebody getting drowned. And so Rahab had to tie a scarlet cord on her window, and she had to tell all of her family to come and get in her inn. You have no idea how risky and how courageous that move was, because Rahab had neighbors. Some neighbors would look outside and see a scarlet cord hanging there and say, what's that all about? Nobody else has a scarlet cord. She's going to go tell her family, and maybe there's at least one member of that family who is going to get angry and mad because she's going against the king. They're going to go tell the king. She took a huge risk when she did that. It was a very, to save her family, she took a huge risk. She had to be very, very courageous. Courage can't keep the hope of salvation secret, and one of the reasons it can't is because unfailing courage walks hand in hand with unfailing love. You know, if you'd been in our class, the adult class, we've been talking about all these relationships that are taking place that Paul talks about in Ephesians 4 and 5. The relationship between husbands and wives, the relationship between children and and their parents, the relationship between workers and their boss. And up here at the top, there's always an authority at a top that somebody has to submit to. And in our society, the person that has that power uses that power. So you're supposed to submit to me. You do what I tell you to do. That's what culture tells us. But we are Christians. And over again, Paul gives the person an authority, power, but he tells them, you use that power like Jesus Christ used it for the church. You use that power to practice agape love. Your objective is to help that person to get to heaven. That's what your objective is. You don't act like you do what I tell you to do. That's cultural. That's what your culture did. You're not in that culture anymore. You need to practice agape love. Agape love is central to our faith. And what we're doing here is we're saying that if I know somebody in need of salvation and I say or do nothing, I don't just have a courage problem, I have a love problem. Rahab did not have a love problem. I thought I would tell you this story. Some of you have seen the movie Hacksaw Ridge. Hacksaw Ridge is a story about Desmond Ross. Desmond Ross was a Seventh-day Adventist. He worked in a shipyard during World War II. And so he had a deferment, but he didn't want the deferment. He joined the Army, despite the fact that he had a deferment, and he was put in the 77th Infantry Division. But the problem was, he was a Seventh-day Adventist, and he believed that he should not kill anybody. He would not carry, he refused to carry a gun, refused to practice with a gun. And so all the guys in that unit just persecuted the heck out of this guy. But he stuck with it. He says, I'm going to be a medic, okay? I'm not going to carry a gun. I'm going to take care of people. And then the Battle of Okinawa came up. And at that time, this 96th Infantry Division was trying to secure something called the Madea Escarpment, which got the nickname Hacksaw Ridge. So this is a picture of Hacksaw Ridge. What had to happen is that the military had to climb on ropes up to the top of this sucker, then go over the top, and over the top there was a huge number of Japanese with snipers and machine guns and stuff waiting for them. The Japanese were smart. They wouldn't shoot at these guys while they're climbing. They'll wait till they all got on top, then they opened up shooting. And it was just a bloody massacre for the soldiers that were going up there. They were getting killed right and left. And a lot of them had escaped, come back down this rope thing here to get to the bottom of the Hacksaw Ridge. And then suddenly somebody noticed something. They saw this injured soldier being roped down the side of this escarpment. And they let him loose and the rope went back up. And a little bit later, another soldier came down. And what was happening was Desmond Ross was going out in that field where people were being shot at, where there were still snipers and machine guns. And he was listening for guys that were hit and still alive. And he was dragging them back to the edge and roping them down. And he roped down an estimated 75 guys out of that field. And in the movie, one of the things that Desmond said that kept him going is he would start back out again and he would say to God, God, give me just one more. Give me just one more. Well, it is nonsense. And by the way, I'm saying this to me as much as to you. It is nonsense to say that I believe the reports of what God has done in Jesus Christ. And I live every day like someone else doesn't need to know that. Our mantra ought to be that of Desmond Ross. Whenever we get up each day, we need to say to God, just give me one more. Just give me one more. That takes courage. But if we believe what we say we believe about something that actually happened in real history, we really believe that, then we ought to be able to do this as well. If you have anything you need to have prayed about, the elders will be around the edge. Let's stand and sing as they come forward.